Well, this is the hardest class of the whole series for me. I've been looking for a couple of months to try to find everything that the apostles had to say about social media, and I have not been able to come up with much. But of course, it is the reality of the world that we live in. And in considering dealing with the subject of social media and entertainment and all the electronic wizardry that has come to us that we all participate in, I imagine if I took a survey or a show of hands that we would all be pretty much agreed about how we should handle it and what we should do with it. And so that would not be new territory for most of us here. And so I really vacillated on exactly how to present this lesson to our consideration. And I decided that I'm going to take a page out of the book of one of the techies, one of the computer gurus, one of the men who has been a mover and shaker in this that had some things to say about it. And I will share that with you here in just a few moments because I think he has some perspectives that are certainly credible and valid. But before we get to that part, I want to introduce it. This picture, I took this last year. These are some ladies in Mozambique that I hire to cook for the preachers every year when I'm there. We'll have about 100 preachers there, and I send money on ahead. I wire it to them so they can buy the rice and the chicken and the cornmeal, etc. And they cook for all of these men those days. And at the end of it, I always come out there, and it's fun to laugh with them, and I tease them and play with the babies and do all that kind of stuff. And this last year when I did that, I joked around with them. Then I started to walk away, and they said, no, wait. No, we want to take your picture. The last 2 years in these sessions, there's always three or four men who will stand at the back or the side with their iPads or their phones, and they'll video my lectures. Social media is everywhere. I told some of you, this was about 8 or 9 years ago. I was driving with a couple of preachers across the Serengeti in Ethiopia, and we stopped in the middle of nowhere. It looked like a picture out of the National Geographic, and a lady was selling charcoal. And there was this little mud hut, and some chickens and a goat running around, and she walks out over to the road to negotiate a price for it. And she's barefoot, and she's got this dress that looks like it probably was donated through some charity and sent over there. Right? And her hair streaming out. And while she's talking, she pushes her hair back, and I notice that in her hand is a cell phone. This was 9 years ago. They are connected. The Chinese came in about 20 years ago in East Africa, and there's cell towers and now power lines everywhere, building the infrastructure. And the reason I point this out is that everyone is connected. And it has its positive that the electronic media that we call emails is the single greatest contribution to world evangelism in my generation. And we may not, I know we take it for granted. Monday morning, it's usually I'll have these preachers, they'll send me emails with questions about stuff. I got a question this past Monday morning on predestination, Ephesians 1, and Calvinism. So I'm writing this preacher and telling him these things, and he writes back and he said, go get clarification on this. And when we are done, I sat there and I thought, I just taught a sermon on, or lesson on predestination in my pajamas. Early that morning, I got up and got online. And it's that way everywhere. And we are so connected. The preacher in Phoenix, Brent Phillips, several of you know him over at Valley. A couple of years ago, a Pentecostal preacher in Kenya got on the website for the Valley congregation, and he started a correspondence with Brent. And a few months ago, Brent said, when you go over there, could you go to Kenya and meet this man? I said, I can't go up there, but could you send him down there? The deacons in Phoenix got together, and they flew him down to our lectureship. And I got to spend 3 days with him. And Brent converted him through emails and this correspondence back and forth over the period of time. And I thought, look, you didn't even have to leave Phoenix. He can't leave for other reasons. He said, I can't get on a plane and fly over there, but I can, you know, from my computer console, from my laptop. And the point I'm making is this is just a universal phenomenon that is for the good. But before we start talking about all the negative things about social media and the electronic world that we live in today, there's plenty of good with every potential, both good and bad. So I want you to see that and understand that as we begin. But as we talk about social media and entertainment, it is basically a computer-based electronic sharing of information. Now, the first line that we have here, television, movies, video games, this was the older school in the last many years where preachers everywhere had sermons on movies and television, and then later with video games that became more and more graphic and more violent, and sex and violence found a conduit through all of these things. But that has further now expanded exponentially in all of these other platforms that everyone here is familiar with in one shape or another, in Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and WeChat, et cetera, that we have listed here. And all of these are avenues. And here's the first point that I think we need to consider about this, that it is a... I'm sorry, the spacing. Richard had some trouble here. He said... it looks very cryptic, doesn't it? It is a wide open door to the secular world, and it is a door that swings both ways. It is one thing to have control over the movies and television and the videos and the games that we bring into our house, but that the rules of this game have changed because now this door swings out and you can go out or even be pulled out into the world through this. And this is what we're going to consider here. If you go online and you just put in, you know, trouble with social media or problems, something like that, you're going to have quite a variety of thesis from different people and sources, and some good, some bad. I've not read them all. But there was one particular source that intrigued me. I don't know this gentleman, but his name is Jordan Greenhall. He was the inventor of DivX, which was a platform for videos years ago. And like the story, they go public and he made $600 million in one day. Just boom, and he's out. But he still continues to write about the phenomena that is the computer world. And he wrote an article that you can find online. You can even find this icon right here. What is the problem with social media? And he just makes four points, but they're not simple points. They're quite technical. They're quite lengthy. And at first, I started to just pass. But the more I started reading and looking at it and try to sift through and analyze what he's saying, he makes a couple of points at the beginning that we would all agree and understand. But then he adds a couple more, that one in particular that I never really thought of, that's rather chilling. And as we're looking at this, I would say, what would you say? What is your number one concern about social media? I'm asking you now. What would be your main concern about social media, Jack?
The addictive properties.
For you?
Not for me, no, but potentially for people. It's just a complete time suck, and I think it's been correlated with dopamine, and not only do you have this opportunity to be addicted, but because that you're talking about kids 8, 10, 12 years old, it's not reasonable for them to, you know, be able to control that kind of thing, and I just think, you know, it's like a drug.
You're spot on. But you hear the last thing that Jack said, the 8, 9, 10, what did you say they're not?
It's not reasonable for them to be able to cope with that.
It's not reasonable for them to be able to cope with that. I like that statement. And that really what we're looking at here, particularly in this class of adults and parents, is that the parents have to take control of this. And that will be the first point that he'll make about addiction to it. And it will be quite We're clear. Anyone else about this? Yeah, sure.
In addition to children, adults have an issue as well, texting and driving.
That's exactly right. You know, I'm getting way ahead of myself, but it seems to me that this is the perfect time to say this. It's turn it off. Now, when Jack said, well, you know, for young people, I said, is it addictive? No, not me. It's, you know, it's for young people. Okay, turn it off. Now, I'm sure Jack could. How many of the rest of us adults can turn it off? Can you turn it off? How many people have, I don't want to show of hands. How many people have your phone on you right now and you have it on? No, I don't want to show of hands. I don't want you to embarrass yourself. Many in this room have their phone right now and they have it on. They may have it on silent because, well, I don't want to disturb the other people. No, it's because I don't want to miss the call. I'll let that thing vibrate. And I promise you, you can ask David, you can ask any other preacher. The preachers know what's going on out there. And you can see people... You can't hide it. And it's the reality that we of the world that we live in here. And we'll get to that here in a little bit. Yes, Trent.
I think it provides an outlet to paint a picture of your life or of other people's lives. It's like all the best moments. And that's something I've seen a lot of in the news. It's especially prevalent in kids. And you see a lot of like young suicide and stuff happens because of this, like, depression because my lifetime is because everyone else's life. And so not only on that side of it, but also on the side of, like, it can become a bragging tool without even meaning to, you know.
I'm glad you went down that road. I didn't plan to, but what would the word be to describe that? It starts with an N-A-R. The narcissism in our culture, when she said all the best moments about, you know, yeah, what, both of them? The best, we've got to share. Oh, I'm at McDonald's. I'm eating fries at McDonald's now. And so we feel that we're so important that other people need to know that. We're getting way down here, but that's just the way it is. Now, we'll talk about it. I'm not on Facebook. I never have been. My wife is, and I've been asking her to go off for years. And she's just about to that point where she's about to say, well, I'm about to, because she'll show me what people, I don't want to see that. Really, they said that? It's so discouraging to see and hear what some Christians have on their mind that is so wrong. It's just, I better stop and come back to my lesson here now. All right. Now, four points here. The first that we've already looked at here is that the stimuli is what he called super normal. First video game I played was Pac-Man. Not much stimuli with Pac-Man. Compare that now to the new Mario Brothers and the Game of Thrones and all the other stuff that's going on here. It of course is addictive because even with all of the enhancement that has come to it, adults as well as children can get hooked into that. And it's very understandable. But the fact is, and this is the one scriptural principle that we can understand, and again, apologize for the margins. Something really funny happened with these programs here. Is that Paul will say that, you know, all things are lawful, but not all things are expedient or helpful. And whatever they may be, good or bad, strong or weak, I'm not going to be brought under the power of these, then it takes over my life. And then he gets to the point, like Sharon was talking about, where people endanger themselves and others because they are so glued into this. Yeah, Carol?
And physiologically, games actually change the brain, chemical brain structure. So they actually looks very similar to how cocaine reacts with the brain. So they're now dealing with a whole realm of trying to make official the diagnosis of video game addiction, because people have to go into rehab because they actually have withdrawals with depression, suicidal tendencies, and all of that if they try to withdraw from them on their own.
Yes, isn't that amazing? Jack, with reference to the dopamine, the studies that, yes, we need to keep, we need that. We need more of it and more of it. And it's just hard to imagine, but that's true, not with a few, but with many. Al?
I think the overall is the withdrawal from the real world, whether it's world that doesn't exist, and but the them is real.
Yes, that's right. That's right. All right. The first is fairly simple, straightforward. The stimuli is so over the top that it's easy to get pulled into this. The second one that he says is that it replaces the strong personal relationships with weak impersonal ones. And the example is that, and this may be extreme, but before cell phones, before Vietnam, before World War II, when you're on the farm, your circle of friends was small, but the relationships you developed were strong and they were deep. And as our world got bigger and bigger and bigger, we had a wider circle of friends and acquaintances. But we did not have the advantage of using the time to develop strong, deep relationships, because we didn't have the time for them, because we've got to spend time with this person over here. And now we get to the point where people, their relationships, rather than being focused and narrow and deep, they're a mile wide and an inch deep. They're worried about likes. They want everybody to like them, and their circle of friends gets larger and larger and larger, and they feel better about that, but they are not developing that strong core sense of a friendship. It's cliche, the husband and wife. I married my best friend. I hope so. That's good. But I'll tell you what your wife needs. Your wife needs another woman who she can deal with, who can share her experiences, that she can have a deep friendship with, and they'll be a lot deeper than the men, but the men will have their friends and their peers, and we need that friendship. Imagine it's just you and your husband or you and your wife alone, and that's it. You're stuck in the middle of Sun City, in the middle of the desert, and you never talk to anybody else. Now, that's not healthy. That's not good. We need to have these relationships with other people, and it makes your world greater and bigger and better. And when I got out of high school and I started traveling, and I realized, man, the bigger my world got, the more friends. I love that. I just loved having more friends. But then you can just go so far, and you can only devote so much time to each individual here. And with the social media, we think we're doing ourselves a favor, but in fact, we're spreading it out so thin. That's his argument here now, is that the friendships are superficial. And that comes from that. Now, any thought or comment about that? Yes, Quinn.
Another thing about video games, they have, I guess it's like a social media within the video game where you're playing. They become friends, but they don't have close personal friends that you can touch, or less of those. They have more of, I'm going to go play video games. These are my friends on video games.
Right.
So that's not a healthy relationship.
Right. If that was their sole relationship, yeah, that would be. There's nothing wrong if they want to have their friendship and their camaraderie there, but there has to be more. There's got to be more to their life than that. Yes, go ahead.
On a positive note, so my kids are doing that, right? And I go in there and he's talking to someone. I'm like, who are you talking to? And he's like, well, I'm talking about Will. Will Kane. So some of the kids are playing and have good influences talking to, but there is bad influences.
Sure.
But it is shocking when you go in there and you see they're just having an open conversation with some stranger.
Yeah. Yeah. But they still need to meet, you know, at the Starbucks or Taco Bell to meet face to face. You got to have FaceTime is great, but you couldn't sustain a marriage with FaceTime. You just can't do that. All right, we're getting way off here. Okay. Now, the next point about this. There is that real danger of the predators and the, quote, false friends that will isolate and exploit a vulnerable mind. And when they are online, as Ben said, they're in this conversation. Well, that feels good when you know your children are communicating with and conversing with another Christian and you're not worried about that. But when they're communicating with a stranger on the other side of the city, the state, or the world, and you don't know who these people are, everyone knows the extraordinary danger that is in that situation. And I will tell you frankly, we've touched on this already, but this is where I stop, and I feel sorry. I have sympathy, but I don't have empathy. Now, please understand, I'm not saying I'm indifferent, but I feel sorry for people, but I do not understand how a young teenager can feel bullied. I know it happens all the time, and it's a major deal. But my first thought is, you turn it off. Why would you allow this person into your life? That's why at the beginning we said, this is a door that swings both ways. It is a door into the secular world, and there are all kinds of people out there that would abuse, or worse. Why would you let that individual into your world and life? Carol?
I think that the bullying goes further than just telling you things over. A lot of the bullying happens in groups where something will be said and sent out to all the students. So you can turn it off, but then you're still going to be ostracized at school and in different places, or people making threats to you because something's been said. So there's been a lot of cases where people turn it off, but that doesn't stop the bullying. It's not a direct...
So what would the next step be, do you think? Is there a pretext for this problem? I would say the first thing, yeah, we're all going to make mistakes with acquaintances and people that have turned out to be counterproductive, and that's trying to be nice about it, that are not good people. And when that happens, you back out of it. And even if it is a circle of friends at school, that the parent would say what to you? Are these your real friends? Would friends treat you this way? The sooner you get out of that environment, the easier, the better, everything will be better. That why would we put ourselves inside a circle of people or an environment that would want to destroy us, that would want to abuse us, that would want to bring us harm, that would say these kinds of things. And I know young people at times can say some pretty insensitive things and do some things. That's just the reality of life. I wish it weren't so, but it does. But to counter that, it's to teach our children and even to teach ourselves that we... take ourselves out of that situation. Adult men, many have come and talked with me through the years about, you know, their situation on the job. It's not a good situation. And they know that they need to get out of that because it is destructive to their own spiritual welfare. Well, I'm glad you have the wisdom and the insight to see that. And it's not the easiest thing to just quit and then go somewhere else. But in that process, and many men have had to do that, white collar, blue collar, no collar, doesn't matter. They've had to get out of these situations or adjust that situation pardon me, so that they are not subjected to circumstances and situations like that, even if it's not an electronic sharing of information. So this is a problem of humanity, and I'm going to talk about Sunday morning. I'm going to pull all these things together and I'm going to give you my opinion, and I'll have scriptural precedent on why all this is happening. And so I'm basically just going to preach a sermon Sunday morning on this. But for tonight's purposes, we look at this, and this is the reality of the world that we live in. And there's all kinds of evil out here for our children as well as for ourselves. Thought I saw a hand or a movement or something. Yeah, Russ.
I was going to say, the other thing is, a lot of times when this bullying happens or abuse happens, children are not taught at home to go to an administrator at school or whatever, and so nothing is ever said, nobody knows about it, not always, but a lot of times nobody knows, and before you know it, you have a student who's committed suicide, yeah. The situation, and the students weren't taught, you go and you talk, the next person in the chain of command. You know, it kind of takes me back to Matthew 18, where if you have a problem with a brother, you go talk to him. That doesn't work, you go talk to me, you know, and you just keep stepping it up.
the speed of life that we live in right now, everything happens so quickly, it gets out of hand and it gets out of control because you don't know what all is happening and where they're talking to and et cetera. So it can get out of hand real quick. And so really the objective of this lesson is to help the parents for the younger people so that they can watch for this and be prepared for this and know how to deal with this, because the people who are not, this gentleman is not a Christian and he does not have a religious perspective at all, but he's going to say a couple things here in a minute that to me are it's just chilling here. Here's the third one that is quite interesting here. He said, what we are doing is that we are trading a complicated world for a complex world. And using the analogy of those things that are finite with rules. And he'll compare a Boeing 777 to a bumblebee. And he'll say, as complicated as an airplane is, there is a finite set of rules that you know that when you do this, that happens. Now, it may be very complicated, but it's predictable. And he says, in a complex organism, it is unpredictable. And he extrapolates this out, and I think this is where it has a spiritual significance for us, is that in a complicated world, and we all live in a complicated world where things are much more than our grandparents, you know, can't imagine. But we choose that. You know, 20 years ago, you go to Sears and you get a blender, and there's a blender with 2 speeds and a blender with 12 speeds, and they're the same price. Which blender do you buy? You buy the blender with 12 speeds. You'll never use them all, but you say, I just want that option. Because the expression, this has endless possibilities. You know, in the 60s and 70s, that's exciting. You know, when you're a 12-year-old boy at the Tomorrowland at Disneyland and you're still watching this, you go, wow, this world is just it's going to explode. There's just so much. It's just going to keep getting better and better and better. It's so attractive. And you hear the possibilities are endless. Well, Mr. Greenhalgh makes this observation in the world that we live in today. He said, in a complex world, when the possibilities are infinite, it changes the rules. And you're now in a situation where with each new wrinkle in the world, the rules change. And that is, I think, much more depictive of our world now than it was a few generations ago, where there was a strict parameter of this is right, this is wrong. But now we're in this post-truth world that we've been talking about, where the rules have changed because you can make up your own rules. And I know you've all heard this analogy, and it is spot on, that the reason why baseball works is that everybody follows the same rules. But if ball players decided to play by their own rules, the whole thing would just fall apart. And what we have in our world today in a complex environment is that as these rules are changing and as the technology is being shoved down our throat, we're just getting so much of it, more and more and more and more, and we can't keep up with it. Now, something is way out ahead of us here, and we're playing catch up with it. And as the rules and the ethics and morals change, God becomes antiquated. Things that are absolute, things that are right or wrong, now are from the past. And now we live in a more complex world, and we need to rethink this and change this and change that. And with each new generation, the rules change. And to me, that would be just almost, that's unsustainable. Now, this fourth, I am not a sci-fi guy. I'm not a Star Wars guy. I'm not into science fiction, barely into Twilight Zone from long ago. And I had to really read and reread and reread what he had to say here, but I understood, and then it has a very significant point. And he's talking about artificial intelligence. And the example he used was the program for chess. Peter, I think his name is Kasparov, who's Russian. He's considered the greatest chess player of all time in the world. And they made a program, and he can't beat it. And they now made a program that can beat the program. And he made the statement, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically he says, you know, you can't play chess anymore. Because the human equation has been removed. And you are so far out of date. You're not competitive. You can't be a part of this. As it now is just putting intelligence against intelligence, and it's not human, it's artificial. But as it begins, and I know this is, it sounds so bizarre, but as it begins to understand a little bit more about ourselves and what moves would make chess, he says, I can't play the game. And this gentleman who wrote this article then made the translation. And now I've heard now for the last year or so all the problems with Facebook and sharing information with Facebook. And I really don't care about sharing information. I'm not going to give them my social security number, but you give it to them and they share it. And people are upset about it. And I never got it, but until I read this article. And he said, here's what's happening. There is a logarithm that is being developed with Facebook and with other entities. And that logarithm is about you. And they plug it in to a program like this chess program that knows you better than you and that now can beat you. And because it can beat you, it will exploit you and use you. You know, when you buy a chainsaw online, how many people, when you buy something online, a couple days later, all these pop-up ads for the same thing. We'll buy this one, buy that. What is that? They just learned something about you. They're going to try to sell you something else. It's that principle. And what this Mr. Greenhall, who is very well equipped in this area, had said that this is what this is leading to, is that the computers will beat you at your own game, and it will lead you to not only purchases, but it will lead your thinking now to ideologies. And that's what's happening in a very slow, subtle way in other areas, and that we can see that happening when we're exposed. And all of our mothers told us, remember what the Apostle Paul said, you know, evil communications corrupt good morals. It's that principle. And so how do you fight this? Three words. Do I hear an amen?
Major violence.
Yeah, you shut it off. You turn it off. That this influence that's coming, that's becoming more and more pervasive and more powerful, we need to control it. And then if we can't control it, we shut it off. Yes. Well?
One of the things that I notice is that the young people with their phones and their iPads are so engrossed in a constant messaging, following, texting, trending.
Okay, can you wait a minute? I'm sorry. I got a call here.
Yeah.
Okay. I started to do that. I said, Dewey, call me in the middle of the class.
But the thing is that they're so engrossed in that they never have any time where they have to sit quietly and actually ponder something, actually think about it, actually figure out what is the logic for something. Because they're being given all these things, and everything is fed to them, not necessarily any of which being bad, but the confluence of all these things takes away the time that they would have to actually think and figure things out for themselves. So they end up being the sum total of what someone else has told them.
Well, that can certainly happen. That's it. They don't think for themselves. Tyler said to read your Bible, but you can't read them. You've got this guy. You've got to shut that up and focus on this. Yes.
Well, a couple comments. Number one is it's not just young people. It's adults. Mm-hmm. Older people. There are moms on the playground who are just as addicted as young people. Most people that use Facebook now are old people, that's my age and older now, that's their demographic. So let's not blame it on the young people. Older people, adults, are just as addicted.
Sure.
Yeah, I used to be on Facebook. I've been on really in a year and a half. And I would see stuff get posted, and immediately, certain people, you know, they're going to be on there immediately. That means they have to be watching their Facebook feed all day long. And they are immediately on there, and they're much older. So I want to not make it an age thing. It happens to everybody.
That's what we said at the very beginning. It's for old and young.
Correct. Regarding number three up there, to Wally's point, the previous one, I could see how Mr. Greenhall would be concerned about that, certainly societally. But I appreciate what Wally's saying, which is more like the ability to think and to reason in a complex, changing world instead of just picking from a set of very narrow choices. So
right.
Societally, we need people to think critically, but in the church, we need people to think critically and can reason and don't have things fed to them in a narrow, very narrow set of circumstances.
Let's come back. I'm glad you said that. I'm going to make one comment about that and push this through. That's true in the world, in the business world. You've got to adapt. You've got to change. But the danger that brings into our spiritual life is that we start questioning, well, I know the Bible said that, but... And this is what has happened now for some time now, 15, 20 years ago, when the Bible was being reinterpreted as the generational narrative, saying that what Paul is saying, for example, in 1 Corinthians 6... is only applicable to the first century. It's not applicable to the 20th century. And this is a major issue in theology and Bible study that comes from this. Well, you know, we're different now. We're not the same as them. Well, we may be more complicated, but wrong is wrong and right is right still today as it was back there. And well, we're not going to be able to cover all that. But that is a major consideration for Christians. Yes, Christians. Okay, good. Let's move on. Okay. I'm teasing. I'm sorry. Yes.
I've been on Facebook for like a year for a lot of those reasons. I recently got back on, and part of that was because it's also a great way to network with people. And I personally have made a lot of connections with a lot of young people in churches in the area who are not all the same congregation, and that makes it hard to get together with people. And so I got back on Facebook to get together with people, right? And so I think, personally, I'm like, shut it off is a great option, but I also don't.
Right.
And so to me, I think a better option is like, okay, so how can we use this, like you said, to draw this things both ways, so how can we use it as an evangelism tool and as a tool to connect with one another?
That's an excellent point, that people who are mature and who can handle it, it is a tool for much good. And so we're not making a broad stroke here saying that this is all evil. That's what we were trying to say at the beginning. There's good and in the potential. But we need to be mature enough to recognize that if we are having a problem with it, or if our child or someone in our family has, that's when we may need to consider temporarily putting it off. Tyler just said, I thought he was going to stand up and say, my name's Tyler Wade, and I've been on Facebook for a year and a half. Yeah, Debbie?
At some point in this conversation, I think television needs to come in to it.
Oh, yeah.
It's been around probably for most of our lives, so it's not just a young issue, these things, you know, really terrible television and manipulative television has been around a long time.
Yeah, we've been off it for a year. Yeah, we.
So, yeah, it's not just young people.
Yeah. There are plenty of options to filter through. The videos that we show our grandchildren, we bought a parental guardian DVD player, put it in, and it filters out everything. We just flat don't have the time. There's several of you said, are you going to talk about this? Are you going to talk about that? We're just not going to be able to cover everything in a short lesson, but I'll try to cover it short. Yeah, man.
To that point, and to what Kareem was saying, like 5 years ago, I went to a thing at the school where they're like, come learn about social media and how to control the kids on it. And I thought, I'm going to learn all the secrets that I hack in and monitor everything that's going on. The very first point the guy said was, you cannot keep your kids from all this.
Yeah.
It is so prolific to all your points that is being made. You have to hit it head on and teach them when you're dealing with this, here's how you do it. I see so many people saying, and I know we were saying shut it off, but I see a lot of people trying to attack it by clamping it down and doing all of that. where there's no way you can stop them from seeing that. We haven't even talked about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. That's exactly. Problems.
You know what I mean? And so it's teaching them how when they're.
That's why this was the hardest class for me, because there's just so much here, and I just can't cover everything here. But let me sum this up in the 30 seconds that we have here. The points to make is that first, it's addictive. Second, it can isolate and reduce our relationships with people, which is not good. It's not normal. It's not healthy. What we can say about that? And we become exposed to unmanageable changes. That's the complex. The complex world is the changes come and rules changes and laws changes and morality and ethics change, and we can't manage that. And then in trying to do that, we're pitting ourselves against a force. Like Ben says, you can't get away from it. It's everywhere. And it is so programmed and designed that it will conquer you if you're not careful. You've got to show extraordinary prudence and maturity and self-control and all of these kinds of things with all these other subjects that we're talking about that we just will not, we'll just have to let it pass to this pass. Go ahead, push the button again. I'll get the sign. Thank you. Here it is if you want to see it.